Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and Ryan Thomas there at the controls, as per normal. And Grace, right back at the phones, are ready to take your calls today, and looking forward to today's program. I think I always look forward to today's program. I don't know, Ryan, you generally interested? Moderately interested?
Oh, absolutely. Sure, I would say it's a strong 7.7 on a 10-point scale.
Good, yeah. Can't get the East German judge to give me a 10 anyway, but... I don't know if you have been in this circumstance or situation where there was financial desperation, where you were under-resourced.
Yes.
Yes.
So yes, I would say so.
The word broke. I mean, you were a college student. Right?
I would, so and you, that's so, what I was yeah. going to say. But,
sure.
But there was. I was very blessed because I had some very strong. Analysis from my parents that came early on about money. So it would kind of always come back into my head when I would try to make a poor financial decision.
Yeah, I've got a few of those in my background as well. But and sometimes even with the best sort of education and parentage and training and all those things, that doesn't mean that circumstances don't sort of knock you off your feet. And that's what we're going to talk about today, reflecting on a new book called Broke. The subtitle is What Financial Desperation Revealed About God's Abundance. And it's a fascinating book, interesting read, and one that I think you can find much to relate to. Karin Rivadeneira is a writer, a speaker, and a regular contributor at the Hermeneutics blog. She spent years as an editor at Christianity Today's magazines and currently serves on the worship staff at Elmhurst Christian Reformed Church. And she's written several books, including Known and Loved, 52 Devotions from Psalms, and the novel Shades of Mercy from Moody. And she was a co-founder of the Redbud Writers Guild, a collective of writers seeking to expand the feminine voices in churches, communities, and culture, and has been involved in the publishing business for a long time. Her and her husband we'll let her tell her story because she has told it pretty honestly and openly. In fact, I think I read in the back, here's Karin Swallow Pryor had written this in the back. It says, if you like your Jesus sugary sweet, don't read Broke. But if you like gritty and funny, honest and faithful, go for Broke. And so... And I don't, maybe that phrase has taken on new meaning. Karin, the idea of going for broke, maybe it's a phrase you don't use in your vocabulary anymore?
That's pretty much exactly right. It has taken on new meaning for me, but it's still a good thing, though, I've discovered. Once you get through those very stressful, very panicky times, you learn in a hurry that God is pretty good in the midst of even... Even our biggest struggles, you know, no matter what is sort of breaking us apart from God or sort of breaking us down, God is good.
Well, probably to set up our discussion, if you would just share a little bit about the story and circumstances, because both you and your husband were gainfully employed and doing well, right? I mean, you had a fancy watch, I know.
I had a fancy watch, that my parents had given me years before, and I was laughing when I heard you guys talking before because that was totally where we were. We had all the right, my husband is in the financial industry. You know, we have all the right knowledge, all the right tools. We were living large, doing well. I shouldn't say living large, but financially we were doing well. You know, we lived in a nice house in the suburbs. We still do. But, you know, everything seemed okay. You know, we were putting tons into our retirement accounts and savings, and we were doing everything the right way. And it seemed, in my brain, it sort of seemed sudden, although it was kind of a slow trajectory of just things started turning the other way. My husband's business started taking some serious hits, kind of just because of cyclical things and because of his own desire to want to move into something different. We entered into a long season of trying to find new work, more work. And then two of our three kids were born without, we didn't have maternity insurance. So we had that, all of a sudden we're incurring some medical debt from that. And it just seemed like this swirling of sort of, you know, quote unquote, bad luck hit us. And it got to the point where all of a sudden, a few years into this, where we kept thinking, well, it'll be okay because we'll just have this for a little bit, but then we'll find something, you know, a new job and it'll all be taken care of. But we found ourselves one day going, wait a minute, we are broke. We are out of money. We have no way to pay these bills. And it really wasn't that we had any made any, you know, serious, huge, wrong decisions. It was just sort of life hitting us unpleasantly. That's how it felt.
You know, one of the questions that in the, you know, I don't know when is a good time to ask it, but I know that you have been a writer for a long time, editor at CT and in writing. So that's what you do. And you took up a contract to write a book about this. I'm curious if you were thinking that, well, I'll write about, you know, financial struggles, but by the time I get done with the book, there'll be this this happy ending.
Yeah, it's interesting because even in the proposal, when I had proposed this story, I mean, we were very much in the midst of it. You know, we're still not fully through it. My husband and I both, thank God, have jobs and we're doing okay. We're paying the bills, but there's still lingering effects, you know, of just walking through that. But so I don't know if I had hoped for a happy ending. You know, I have joked with friends of mine who, you know, or friends of mine have joked with me, I should say, who say, you know, this book is broke. Maybe it'll do well enough that the next book can be called Rich, you know, but it's, I don't know that I even assumed there would be a happy ending, but I just knew that I wanted to tell this story that the happy ending really is that what God seeks to teach us in these times, you know, we might never know fully why we go through them. It might not ever make total sense, but we do get to experience something really rich and really amazing. And for me, it was really just experiencing the realness of God, sort of being invited into the mystery of this relationship with God that we're able to have, and just sort of being able to experience and discover God in a whole new way that I hadn't been able to when life was so comfortable, when I didn't need God quite as much, if you will.
I should mention, we do have five copies of the book, Broke, to give away, which isn't going to help Karen pay her bills at all. But we're still grateful that University Press has made these available. And I think as you hear the story, you're going to want to have a copy because it will you'll be able to resonate with the circumstance, whether it's you know, financial desperation or there's some other desperation in your life. Some honest discussion from Karen Riven-Denera about God's faithfulness. So you can give us a call if you'd like to at least sign up for one of the books. We'll do a drawing, and if you would like to contribute to the conversation, I guess you probably don't have to financially contribute, but I mean, maybe we'll take an offering at the end too. At 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. Karen, I want to kind of get your perspective. I mean, you know, living in the suburbs, doing well, serving the Lord, you know. So I'm interested to know if you had if your attitude to others who were financially destitute changed as a result of what you have experienced, because I think some of us, I mean, I'll admit that I probably am judgmental about people going broke. Well, how did that really happen? And, you know, didn't they see that coming? So what changed maybe in your attitude to others that might be in similar situations?
Oh, that was huge, because I was totally the same way, too. You know, very judgmental, thinking, well, come on, just save more, live less. You know, don't live beyond your means, all that stuff. I thought it was so, so, so simple. And even toward, you know, horrific poverty, you know, like homelessness or something, I'd think, come on, how can they have no one to call, nowhere to go? You know, and when you get that close, you know, we had months where we really had no idea how we were going to pay our mortgage. And it was by, you know, the grace of God and the generosity of family members alone that we were able to make it many months, you know. So we were living on the edge of just this close to losing our house. And I know many, many people who have. And all of a sudden it occurs to you, wait a minute, this is how this can happen. You know, it's not really that hard, because then, you know, if you lose your house and you don't have income to live anywhere else and your credit is terrible, and what if we didn't have family? What if we didn't have anywhere to go? And all of a sudden coming that close, that face to face with the reality of this is how people end up homeless. This is how people end up it changes everything. Because you can't be, you know, surely there's still value of, you know, learning proper saving skills and budgeting and all that sort of stuff. And there are other issues that go into things like homelessness than simple, you know, bad luck or whatever. But if it doesn't change your heart, I think something is wrong with you. You know, you have some serious questions to do, because there's no way you can walk through it and not be more sympathetic and not really feel for people who are in this situation, because it's terrifying. And, you know, I write a lot about the goodness of God and that, and the beauty of being, you know, of needing God and being desperate for something that only God can come in and fill. But it is a really scary time. So definitely it's changed the way I view issues of poverty and, you know, even not extreme poverty, but just people who are broke, you know, who just can't pay the bills. It's changed my attitude a lot.
You mentioned, you know, children being born didn't have, you know, the right enough insurance, so you had medical bills piling up. So how old were your kids kind of in the, I guess, when this began? And talk about, did you share with your kids kind of what was going on in terms of, you know, I mean, we all as parents, you know, get pretty good at saying, no, we can't afford that. We're not going to buy that now. But how did you engage your children in this downward spiral?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, my kids are 12, almost 10, and 7. And so, you know, for my 7-year-old, for example, this has been a story of his life. You know, this has been happening for his whole life. But you get sort of good at just explaining sort of the basics. You know, we didn't ever want our kids to panic, but we were open about the fact that, you know, dad's going to, you know, the business isn't doing well, and he's going to close that up, and we're going to be looking for work. And we were open, too, about, you know, grandma and grandpa helped us out this month with it. You know, that was so wonderful of them. You know, letting them know, and actually not grandma and grandpa, we'd say abuelo and abuela, because that's what they are to my kids. But, you know, and we would say things like that, because I wanted them to know that it's okay. I didn't want them to panic, but I also didn't want them to have a sense of shame about it. And so I just tried to, you know, let them know that this is something other people experience too. You know, that we're going to do the best we can. We're still going to, you know, try and live our lives as best that we can and keep our attitudes as best as we can. But we were fairly honest with them. I mean, you have to be, because otherwise, you know, kids ask for things all the time. They want to do things all the time. And if you're not honest, it makes it really hard to explain why you have to say no all the time.
And talk more about how to keep that attitude in the midst of, you know, God walking through this this time of your financial desperation. The book is called Broke, What Financial Desperation Revealed About God's Abundance, and it's written by our guest today, Karen Rivadeneira, a writer, speaker, and regular contributor at the Hermeneutics blog, her.meneutics blog. And she's spent years as an editor at Christianity Today's magazines, and has written several works, and this is from University Press, and we've got some copies to give away, and I'd love to have you maybe share a bit about your story as well. You want to join the conversation or just listen in and like to just be in on the drawing for the copy of the books, we'd be happy to have you. Give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484.
There's a place to grow in your faith and share hope with friends and family, with practical resources and insight for your daily life, and it's right at your fingertips. At MyFaithRadio.com, find the latest podcasts from Faith Radio's original programs, encourage someone through prayer on PrayerWorks, or be challenged by the latest from our Faith Radio blogging team. It's just a small slice of what's available to you at MyFaithRadio.com. Log on today to find it's not just information, it's transformation.
Helping you grow deeper in your faith.
God can use every one of us, regardless of our baggage. Hey friends, Susie Larson here, and on the next Live the Promise, I'm talking with Elisa Morgan. She'll share her own journey from leading mops to walking through brokenness in her own family. We're going to talk about what it means for God to redeem our legacy.
Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays from 3 to 4 on Faith Radio.
Well, we're 18 after the hour, and I want to talk about where our hope is in the midst of hard times, because Karen and her family experienced being broke, literally. I mean, they got caught in a swirl of depressed housing markets, sagging businesses, long periods of underemployment and unemployment and debt from uncovered medical expenses. It all hit at once. And she's written about it in a book called Broke. Karen Rivendanera serves as she's a sought-after speaker, author, former editor of Christian Parenting Today and the Marriage Partnerships magazine, regular contributor to Christianity Today's hermeneutics blog and Today's Christian Women magazine. And we're learning about what financial desperation revealed about God's abundance. So did you have peace in the midst of storm? And was that one of the things that you maybe fought most? I mean, I think we know that women often one of their key needs is security. You didn't really have any security, did you?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of security, but there also wasn't, I mean, I don't mean to make it sound like there was a, constant peace in the middle of these storms, because there was a lot of panic and a lot of crying out to God during the middle of it too, So I never want to make it sound like the whole time I was like, it'll be great, everything will be fine, because there was some, lying on the floor crying going on and some very angry conversations with God about this. Why are you letting this go? But what I learned to discover, or I learned somewhere in the midst of this, and it wasn't that early on, it took a while, I'm a slow learner with stuff like this, was that even though God maybe wasn't answering my prayers for financial rescue the way that I'd hoped and wanted him to, you hear these other stories about people in these circumstances and they pray, but then all of a sudden the doorbell rings and boom, there's a check from some relative they didn't know they had who had died and left them, $4 million or something. None of that happens for us. But what I did learn was just sort of the quote-unquote small ways that God was just meeting our needs, the way that he was providing the things that we needed financially somewhat, spiritually, yes, mentally, emotionally. God was very present and active in that. And it was a matter of me needing to learn to, switch gears and to notice God at work, to notice that he was there, even if he wasn't just answering that prayer the way I thought he would, if that makes sense.
But you did spend some time praying about some unknown relative that would yes. pass on and give you money, right?
I had sort of hoped there'd be something like that, or I'm a writer. I have books in French. I would always go to God and say, "Really, is it that hard? I mean, you could touch the hearts of, all these people that can make them rush out and buy the books, and so I could get that unexpected big, royalty check. God could do that." He chose not to. He didn't. But of course, yeah, there was, there's those prayers definitely exist. Please rescue us. God could make it all go away. And he didn't. And so at some point I had to turn sort of my mind around and go, okay, so he's not doing that. But if I still am going to believe that God exists, that God loves me, that God is for me, I need to try and turn my prayers and turn my mind to figure out what he is doing in all of this.
So were your prayers sort of the show me more of you, more honest than the help? We're going to lose our house.
The help stuff was really raw. And to me, that was just, that's our crying out. That's sort of the most reactionary prayer I think there is. And that came for a long time. The help, help, help. And then the sort of angry, prayers, the laments of why are you not helping? I went through that whole season. And I think after that came the thing of, okay, so show me what's going on then. Where are you in this? What are you working? What do you need me to learn through this? So it definitely took a long time. It was not something that just, changes on a dime.
The you talked about the why question, why you're letting this go, and mm-hmm. I guess the idea that it goes on so long. That's probably the hard part, isn't it? It's like, well, we can understand there'll be seasons, but this was a season upon season upon season, it seemed like.
Yeah, it really was. And it was hard because it was years and years. And there were so many, what I kept saying, there were so many opportunities that would have been so easy for God to fix it. There were so many near misses where it was like, well, if this could just happen, then everything will be okay. And so to be just allowed in that space for so long, gets really frustrating. But of course, we know from reading the Bible, the Israelites wandering the desert for 40 years, you know, God's not really working on our timetable. And we know that, and we say that sort of platitude all the time, but to live it is a very different and very difficult thing that I think it's really important for us to understand for other people who are walking through really long, agonizing seasons of something. You know, some people have to deal with things their entire life, you know, that God never delivers them from. And that does raise some really hard questions, I think.
You picked a word for a year, 1 year, and the word was the word was increase. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, it did work out. You know, well, it worked out eventually. So, right, there was a year a couple of years ago where I got on this word of the year bandwagon that people do, and the word that I had was increase. I had come through a season of severe doubt, which happens to me repeatedly, you know, and I think doubt is okay. I think it can be really, really healthy. But just my questioning had taken on this big, you know, kind of leaned heavier toward the doubt. And so I had asked God, I said, I felt like the word increase was important, and I wanted to increase my faith. And of course, the flip side was, you know, increasing my bank account wouldn't hurt either. So the year started off great, you know, and there'd be like these little things where it was just sort of the world was exploding with signs from God all around, and it was wonderful. And then it kind of came tumbling and crashing down to probably about 4 months in when I hit, I think, what was the lowest point of all of this. And this would have been a couple years ago now. The absolute sort of rock bottom of my faith, where I actually made an appointment with my pastor. I had never done this before. And I went in and I sat in his office and I sat across from him and I said, I don't even know if I believe in God anymore because he's just not responding. And I can't believe that he would just let this go. I mean, that was really where I was at. So basically I told my pastor that my choices were that either God doesn't care or that he's not there. And it was one of those moments, even hearing it come out of my mouth was so troubling. But that was just sort of the point of my despair. So that was the low point of increasing my faith. But in a way, that's when things got really good, because I realized how far away I'd come. And that's sort of the point at which I thought, I do believe God is there. I do believe God is good. I do believe he loves me. So I got to turn this around. My pastor helped me with that, too.
Well, is it up to you to turn it around? Or, I mean, isn't that sort of the challenge? How much do we, you know, allow God to do his work in us versus how much do we do on our own?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not saying that it was just a question of willpower, but I feel like it was that sort of rock bottom faith moment where God, even as I was questioning his very existence, it was in that moment that I feel like, you know, this idea of, how about you turn your thoughts around a little bit? You know, I write about the idea of think different. Try to see this from a different vantage point for a moment. Try to see it from maybe from God's vantage point if you can. Maybe start changing those prayers from help, help, help to why, you know, and enter that. That's really when, yeah, I believe it was the Holy Spirit working in that. And it just got to a place where the faith became so, my faith did increase, because it became so much deeper, so much more real, I think, having walked through that serious season of doubt.
And were your kids tracking with your faith journey as well, or your husband?
Oh, my husband, surely. I mean, we went through, you know, it's funny, you know, we're married, but we're two individual people. So we kind of, our journeys were very different, you know, highs and lows at different times. But certainly he went through that too. My kids, you know, my oldest son, certainly he's more expressive. So he's more the one to talk about it. But yeah, he went through some major questions. You know, we had, for them, you know, before you were asking about how much they knew, they had been in a Christian school up until a couple of years ago. And to the point we just obviously couldn't say that. And that was one of their biggest questions, is my son asking me, why wouldn't God make it so that we could stay in this school? You know, why wouldn't he do that? Why wouldn't he provide for that? And, you know, for him, that was a big question. That was very confusing, you know, the idea. Now, as it turned out, they're all so much happier, and it's just been a wonderful, amazing experience being in our local public school that they totally get it now. But at the time, you know, it raises big questions for the whole family, I think. Why would I have to leave a place where I have friends, where I have this, where there's so much goodness, you know, where we can sing praises to God? Why would he make that end? You know, so it does start to affect the whole family, but it does lead to some good conversations.
We're going to have more good conversation just ahead with Karen Rivendonera, who is a writer, a speaker, and regular contributor at the Hermeneutics blog from Christianity Today. And she's been an editor and a writer and has written a wonderful book called Broke, What Financial Desperation Revealed About God's Abundance. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Maybe you have the why question as well. It's 877-93-FAITH. Karen Rivendonera and her husband didn't think they were going through the motions, but the idea of experiencing God at a whole new level came at the expense, literally, of their expenses. They they lost it all, and she's written about it frankly and well-written. The book called Broke, What Financial Desperation Revealed by God's Abundance. Karen's been in the publishing industry for a long time, authored a couple of books, including Known and Loved, 52 Devotions from the Psalms with MOPS International, a novel, Shades of Mercy, from Moody Press, and new ones from InterVarsity. We've got some copies to give away. And, Karen, I want to talk a little bit about you addressing the book, the prayer, you know, give us this day our daily bread. We've probably said it since kids. I mean, you grew up in a church family, at least at some point along your life. So what did that prayer mean to you? Over this season of needing truly daily bread.
Yeah, well, in the book I write the story of how about 12, 13 years ago, a group of friends and I were discussing the Lord's Prayer. And, you know, we were spending a lot of time on what it actually means for daily bread. And in this group, you know, we are all doing well financially, very comfortable lives, and we all admitted we had no idea what it really meant. You know, and we were having this debate that it just did not speak to our lives. And I came home that night and I was really troubled by that, because I thought, if there's a line that Jesus taught us to pray that we don't understand, what on earth, you know, what's going on? There's something wrong there. And at the time I prayed, I'm like, God, help me understand what this means. And I joke in the book that it was the dumbest prayer I ever prayed, because I have so learned 100 million times over of really what that means. And, you know, again, not the final say, but what it means in my life. And I think what it means for many of us. And, you know, so often we say, well, it's not about the bread itself. It's about whatever it is that we need to get through the day. And that is very true, except when you are in a position where you literally don't know how you are going to pay for food, how you're going to pay your bills, that takes on a very literal meaning. I just actually had a friend joke on, my Facebook page that her moving from being, you know, regular employed to being a freelancer has helped her understand that better too. And it's true, because suddenly there's no guarantee of where things are going to come from. You don't know how your needs are necessarily going to be met. You want to trust that they will, but you need to also recognize that it's out of your control. And I think for most of us, we spend our lives thinking we are in control of all of it. You know, we're Americans, we're well-educated, you know, and all these things. And we think we never have to worry about that. But we forget that really none of it is in our control. So this season of financial desperation really opened up that idea to me that it's not in our control. We do need to have things, you know, turn to God for this. But the other upside of this, though, and I think why it's so beautiful in this prayer, is that when we do ask for our daily bread, whether it is literal or what, you know, if it is something else that we need relationally or for our jobs or whatever it is, when we do turn to God for that and say, I need this from you today, you are the only one who can provide this, there's something so amazing that happens when God does come through with it. Maybe not in the way we expected, but when we do find that sustenance of whatever it is, there's something really amazing that happens, and that just understanding God and his realness in a whole new level.
We'll talk more about some of the lessons learned from Broke, What Financial Desperation Revealed by God's Abundance, with Karen Rivendonera. Let's take a call. Tim's listening in Madison area to Faith 1190. Tim, go ahead. You're on with Karen.
Hi. Yeah, I went through similar things through the 2000s and later 2000s. Small business, self-employed, lost my home to a fire. Shortly after, was jumped by thugs where they shattered my jaw, and I owed $100,000 in medical bills. And then a few months later, had a second surgery, and then I was still having to work. And in a snowstorm, was in an accident and almost died. And during that time, right after that, was when the economy went downhill, and I was literally down to my last dime when God put a job in my hands that turned things right around. And the whole time people used to say, how can you, that knew me anyways, that how can you be smiling and laughing and with all this that had happened to you? I had committed suicide a long time ago, they joked. But it's during that whole time there was like a bubble around me that I was going to be taken care of.
Hmm.
Tim, thanks for your call, and glad that God is still providing for you in some abundant ways. We're grateful for that, Karen. I mean, that story can probably be told many times over.
It can, and I love to hear that. And it's interesting because when he talks about that bubble around him, what I hear in that is just that he has a tremendous gift of faith, which I admire, because I know other people who have gone through this too, and their story sounds different because they were so you know, their faith was so strong, and where mine, you know, crumbled and faltered at times. But in each of these stories, though, it's lovely of the work that God does and what he has to teach us in that. But I love that idea, that bubble of safety. That's a lovely image going forward of what God sort of, what he allows.
Karen, how did you, what did you learn about accepting gifts and help from others? Because it was family, it's friends, it's church. I mean, that requires some vulnerability. I mean, you probably have to make that known, right?
It does. It requires a lot of vulnerability, and it was vulnerability that we were not willing to share for a long time because, again, we kept figuring everything will turn around. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It wasn't until it was just decidedly not fine that we went, oh, man, we need help here, and, you know, had to have some conversations with our families and, you know, some friends and stuff. And it was really difficult. And accepting gifts, you know, and accepting help is so humbling. It's hard to even express because it's just sort of, there's a humiliation factor of we shouldn't have to have this. And yet the people who offered, you know, gifts and help to us did it with such amazing hearts that there was no, they weren't pitying us, you know, it was, they were genuinely wanting to help. And so as humbling as it is, I mean, it's an amazing way to feel loved, and particularly by when it came from people who you would have never expected or you wouldn't have thought, you know, would step in and say, here, how can I help you with this? And, but it's hard, you know, it's much easier to give, you know, to be on that end. And yet there's something really great when we do kind of accept that help. You know, most of us don't like to get help in any form. You know, we always think I can do it all on our own. And again, it's sort of a laying down of the control issue to be able to say, yeah, I can't do this on my own and I do need help.
So have you out of this maybe come up with some perspective on how churches could be maybe more aware and show real compassion to those in need in their congregations?
Yes. Yeah, I wish, you know, I had something really official, but I think the biggest thing to remember is that there are, in every congregation, there are lots of people going through this. You know, my church that I work for and have gone to for a long time, you know, overall, we are a, you know, wealthy congregation. There are a lot of people with a lot of means. But I know, ever since writing this book and starting talking about it, there are a lot of people really struggling, people who are terrified to say, I'm struggling, because I don't want people to know. So one of the best things that I think we can do as a church body, just of ourselves, is being, you know, is risking that vulnerability that I was so afraid to risk for so long. Because once you open up, once you share and say, I need help, this, you find out, too, that there are lots of different people in situations who need it. And it makes you feel much less alone and much more able to figure out ways to ask for help or whatever. But I think sort of from the top down, that compassion thing is huge, because I think for the most part, of course, people are willing to help and churches are willing to help. But there is, I think, you know, you and I talked about this earlier, that we have that sort of judgmental factor in our head, too, that we go, but how would this happen? You know, so I would just encourage any church and however they work at, you know, work with giving help, you know, really before you meet with families or discuss this, really pray and ask God to remove any sort of judgment from your, you know, mind, to sort of just fill you with compassion and empathy and understanding, because it's terrifying. And the people asking for help are, they're embarrassed and they're ashamed and they're afraid and all these things, that just to be able to come in truly, you know, as Jesus-y as possible is huge.
You talk about your spiritual gift of generosity, which is kind of like, you know, as you've probably thought through that and say, well, why, you know, why would God allow us to go through this when I've got this gift that I was exercising it well before.
Right. I mean, that to me was one of the, I mean, it's not funny, but right. Whenever I do one of those like spiritual gift assessment tests or whatever, giving is always my number one gift. And I love it. That's just the way I respond. I think that that's terrific. I love to be able to help people financially. And so I think part of my previous financial security was always that, well, because I have this gift of giving, of course God would want us to be, you know, taken care of and well off, because he, you know, he needs us to give our money to causes. He needs us to do this, right? And God doesn't really need our money is what I've learned. You know, he wants other things besides that too. But it's been difficult. You know, because, yeah, our giving has changed significantly in that. And I've had to sort of, you know, hand it over to God and say, okay, I have this desire, I have this ability, but you need to, you know, help me figure out what this is going to look like now. Or certainly, you know, when we didn't have any money, you know, what does this look like and what do you want me to do with this? But, yeah, I always sort of assumed that we'd never have any financial difficulty because, you know, when you have a gift of giving, it seems like you shouldn't have things to give.
you did have, joked at the beginning, you did have a nice watch. Tell the story about the watch.
My watch. So my parents, when I graduated from high school, my parents had given me a beautiful gold watch. And I loved this watch. It was very, you know, proud. It just kept perfect time. It was just very much a part of me. And somewhere before all of this started, I started having this, I'd look at my watch and I'd have like a weird thought in my head where I'd go, I don't know if this is appropriate that I'm wearing this expensive watch when, you know, people in the world are hungry and stuff. And I sort of had this sense that maybe I should be getting rid of it. And then our church did a capital campaign when we built a building. And I looked at my watch and I thought, maybe I should sell this and give it to the church or whatever, but I didn't. And I kept like through the years, it'd be like something that like, I don't know if this is right. I don't know if this is right. Oh, really, it should be sold and given to people who need it. And one day during our financial crisis, just almost at the worst, I was putting something away and I moved my arm and my watch went flying off my wrist. The band had broken, the gold band, which should never have even broken. It snapped off and went flying. And it was one of those things where I kind of felt like God was saying, okay, I've been wanting you to get rid of this. How about you do it now? You know, now that it's not even worth anything. So it took it literally being sort of flung off my wrist and yanked away from me for me to finally get to the point where I said, okay, let's get rid of this. Unfortunately, then we were the impoverished family that it ended up helping. And it seems so silly to me now, you know, why I was holding on to these. And yet it was symbolic of, I think, what was going on in my life, the way that I wanted to hold on to financial security and how I wasn't willing to give up my sense of security or my love of money to God. I wasn't willing to hand it over willingly. And I think God allowed some things to happen in my life so that I would be, you know, so that they would break, so that that would crack and I could focus on him without all that money in the way.
The book we're referencing is called Broke, What Financial Desperation Revealed About God's Abundance. On the back cover, the lead line says, God let us go broke and dead broke. And it goes on to explain all that Karen and her husband experienced and family. And then it says, Karen Rivadeneira invites us to join her on a frank journey into both a financial and a spiritual desert. In these pages, you'll find a safe place to explore your brokenness, seek solace. And we'll have some more with Karen Rivadeneira, who is a writer, sought-after speaker, author, former editor of Christian Parenting Today and Marriage Partnerships Magazine, and regular contributor to Christianity Today's Hermeneutics blog. And I think we may have another copy or two of the book that we'll... we've got five copies to give away of the book Broke, and so if you'd like to just Give us a call, sign up for the drawing, and if you have a question too, you're welcome to join the conversation, 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. More in a moment.
We're blessed to hear the stories.
God just has walked us miracle after miracle.
They're stories of God at work, and we're humbled when He uses something heard on Faith Radio to reach you where you're at.
I'm just so blessed by all your speakers. I just want to thank you for all that you provide.
Have you been impacted by what you've heard on Faith Radio? Would you share your story with us? Call our Faith Line to pass on your story today. It's 877-93-FAITH. 877-93-FAITH.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Are you new to the station? Well, welcome. It's great to have you tuning in. We have a new listener packet that's designed for friends just like you. It tells you a little bit about the station, who we are, why we exist, and what we're hoping to accomplish in the Upper Midwest. It's yours free for the asking at myfaithradio.com. Check it out. It's myfaithradio.com. It's the new listener packet. Request yours today.
Got to know God only through losing it all, and that is the challenge that in many ways Karen Rivadeneira experienced with her family, and she's written about it in a wonderful book called Broke, What Financial Desperation Revealed About God's Abundance. Karen sought after speaker and writer, been publishing for a number of years, and Karen, I'm interested as you've talked a bit about your story. Was it harder for you personally or maybe to see your husband and kids experience this hardship? I mean, as a mom, you don't want anything, harming your kids. What were the emotions of this as you looked at your role as a wife and mother?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely harder to experience it or to see your family, struggling with it. Although it's not that my kids were, they didn't feel the stress of it all that time. But if I would have been single going through this, it would have been felt very different, But, yeah, knowing the way it affects your kids and worrying, are we depriving them of an American childhood because they've not gone here or they've not done this thing or, and those sort of worries certainly occupy a lot of time. And obviously as a wife, it's difficult to watch a husband walking through this. You don't want to see people in pain or frustration or stress. You want, even though we know that, difficulties are what grow us and shape us, it's really hard to watch, people we care about struggling and not being able to do much about it. So it was definitely difficult. And then just the stress. I mean, all of this, creates for a stressful home life. When things were at their worst, financially at their worst, things get very tense. It makes for a tense marriage, when the both of us are very worried about, how things are going to get covered. And that trickles down to kids, too, and just knowing, and worrying, what does this mean for them? How are they receiving all of this?
You, in the midst of that, had little opportunities to see God in maybe new ways. You talk about serendipity. Say a word about some of those experiences.
Yeah, serendipity is funny. I tell the story about how I first learned the word as a little girl. It was the title of a book that I wanted, and I just thought it was the loveliest word in the whole wide world. And I found that came to play again just as I went through this, of learning to even experience God in the serendipities of life. Serendipity is a happy accident. A coincidence, providence would be the, churchier word to use for it. But I just felt like these were some of the really fun moments of, what my friend calls a God nod, when you just get those little reassurances. And one of my favorites, I have a favorite forest preserve near where we live that I would take my kids to and we'd walk around. And there's this place, so it's in Hinsdale, Illinois, which is near my house. And then I have another favorite place in the whole wide world that's up in Fish Creek, Wisconsin, up in Door County. And I was walking through the place in Hinsdale near my house, and it's this gorgeous stone visitor's lodge. And I was just kind of marveling at the beauty of this place. And I went into the visitor's lodge. My youngest son was playing with sort of the artifacts there. And I started reading about how this place was built. And I found out that it had been built by the FDR's Civilian Construction Corps. That's not Conservation Corps.
Conservation Corps, yeah.
Conservation Corps, yes, thank you, during the Great Depression. And as I read those words, I realized, wow, that's odd. My other favorite place in the world, these stone cottages and these beautiful walled drives that are up in Peninsula State Park in Wisconsin, those were also built during the same time by the same organization. And it was just like an example of one of those weird little moments where you've realized that you have this sort of insight into some of the best things that we love are born right out of the most difficult. And it isn't that, you know, so it's that coincidence that here are these two random places that I love built by the same thing from the Great Depression. And it's not that I believed that God orchestrated the entire Great Depression so that someday I could learn this, you know, but it's just the way God works. There is sin in the world. There is difficulty in the world. We all have hardships, you know, individually and societally, and God can redeem those. He can work through those. And so just learning to sort of notice those little moments, those little serendipities, became just huge for me because they were reminders again, and I've said it before, of just God at work, that God was there, that he noticed what was going on, and he was with me in it.
You haven't changed your view on sort of government support and help or those kinds of things?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was the other thing, right? I come out, I'm sort of libertarian leaning. So that was the other part that was very amusing, that here it was big government, you know, showing the face of God. And so I had to admit that maybe my friends are right and that maybe God is indeed a socialist. So that was the other big takeaway. But that's all right.
We'll probably edit that from the show. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, was there a point where you sort of felt like, well, you know, I need to be doing more to be the answer to my prayers as opposed to waiting on God? Did you think about that from time to time?
Oh, all the time. I'm a doer, you know, and I love to work. I love to take on new projects. So that's always my knee jerk is, well, I'll just send out, you know, more emails and I'll take on more work. And, you know, and to a point that works and that happened. You know, I was blessed that there were different projects along the way that would come through, sort of always just barely meeting the bills, you know, or coming in to get us through 1 month or whatnot, daily bread sort of thing. But yeah, that's totally my knee-jerk reaction to things is I will just take control. I will make it better. I will make this happen. And that was, I think, one of the things that was so interesting during this too, because there was just so many times, so many rescues that, you know, I tried to make happen or my husband tried to make happen that just didn't work out, that seemed to not make any sense. And so, again, it was a lesson in sort of giving up control and waiting on God, as you said.
One of our callers, Leslie, called in and said, I think the face of financial hardship has changed over the years. It's not always easy to tell if someone's in need just by looking at them. But
yeah.
Were you able to sort of mask it in public?
Oh, sure. I still think it's kind of surprising for people because I think we have an idea of what poor looks like. And I'm very careful to define broke as, you know, not being able to pay the bills. So and it's scary no matter what stage you're at. You know, someone could live in, you know, a huge mansion and be broke, and we wouldn't understand that. You know, I live in a nice but very modest suburban home, you know, and we were broke. And obviously then there's severe poverty. And so definitely there are different masks to it. The good news for me is that we have two very old cars and I feel like they speak very well. Cause if I'm standing in front of you, you probably wouldn't guess that I had been broke or had walked through that. But if I drive up next to you, you'll get it. You'll see. You'll look at our 15-year-old Corolla and go, oh yes, I see it now. That's kind of my testimony.
Karen, sort of working through those desert times, what's the key to getting out? I guess what would you say to someone who's in the middle of this season, which seems like it's gone way too long? What's the encouragement?
I don't know that I have a way to get out, because again, if we're talking about waiting on God, you know, sometimes we just need to linger in some of these places. But I really think it's learning to notice God in them, to stop sort of expecting God to answer prayers or, quote unquote, show up the way we imagine or we expect that he should, and start opening our sort of minds and hearts and even using all of our senses. I write a lot about that in the book. You know, learn how to smell God, learn how to taste God, learn, you know, all those things. Learn how to notice God at work in this world, because that to me made all the difference. Because then I began to see how prayers were actually being answered in the way that my life was changing, in the way that my family was changing, the way that He was, in fact, blessing us through this season of brokenness.
The book's been out for a little bit. Give me a little sense of kind of the reaction that you've gotten. Anything surprised you?
You know, it's interesting. There's been some really great reactions, and already I always forget the amazing part of being a writer is the emails you get from people who just are saying, thank you for talking about this because we're going through this and I can't say it. You know, people are really afraid to talk about this stuff. And so that's the thing that's always heartbreaking, and yet I understand. So I hope people do use this as an opportunity. You know, I heard of someone who wanted to use it in their church book study group just to give people an opportunity to come in and talk about it. And I was so excited to hear that. You know, there's the other thing where people do kind of read it and go, well, how broke can you be if you wrote a book about it? Because, of course, people imagine that you write a book and you get this enormous advance that, you know, sets you on the, you know, sort of rich train for the rest of your life. And most writers will tell you that is not true. It's about the lowest paying profession there is. But so that's having to kind of counteract that is interesting, too, that there's this perception that just the fact that you have a book means you can't possibly have been broke or be broke or, you know, everything must be fine now. So that would maybe be the flip side.
May want to consider bricklaying or something with another Conservation Corps troop or something.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Good benefits.
That might be an area where you could really excel.
I think so. Yeah, I agree.
Karen, it's been great to visit with you. Thanks for sharing so openly in your story, and look forward to reading more of your writings on you write regularly at Hermeneutics, right, on the blog?
So. Yes, I do.
Good. That's HER.Meneutics, MENUTICS. That's the blog. From Christianity Today, Karen has been part of the writing and the editing work there at CTU for a number of years. This is her new book. It's called Broke, What Financial Desperation Revealed About God's Abundance. And we wish you continued success and faithfulness in getting out of the hole and continuing to learn some wonderful lessons in the process.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on.
Karen Rivadeneira joining us today on Connecting Faith. And if you had a chance, didn't catch all the program, you can always catch it on the podcast at myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. And you can share it with a friend, too, myfaithradio.com. By the way, speaking of broke, the beauty of broken is the topic for today's Live the Promise of Susie Larson. She talks to Lisa Morgan coming up at 3.